This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is December the 31st, 2020. Tomorrow is the new year. Happy New Year, everyone. So this will be interesting to see how 2020 goes. I have what I think is a hysterical costume for New Year's for 2021. Just a couple of things. Well, I won't talk about that, but one of the things that struck me, since 2021 is actually technically the beginning of the 2020s, we are now officially in our 20s in the new millennium, and we have made it through the teen years. I know some people will say, well, it was 2020, so we were already in the teen years. But of course, the decade of the 20s doesn't officially start until 2021. So we've made it through our teen years, and now we're moving into our 20s. So let's just see if maybe we can grow up a little bit. Although I don't have much hope until we get to about 2025, because that's when the brain is actually finished forming up for people. So maybe by the time we get to 2025, some of these things that we're thrashing around about, they'll get worked out. We'll see. So it's been a good week. We had a lovely Christmas. It was really, really lovely. Very enjoyable. I actually took off all week last week from writing. I hadn't necessarily intended to, but the way it worked out, I kind of just took a week off. And I mentioned last week that I'd gotten my costume collection organized and in a database, and then I worked a little bit on some costumes. The Argyle Day is coming up. It is not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow. I think I'm squared away for Argyle Day. I'm working on Rubber Ducky Day right now, and I'm pretty well squared away for that. I know what I'm doing. I just don't have a couple of the pieces in yet, and one of the pieces I brought in, and I was trying to get it configured and poked a hole in it, drained all the air out of it. So I have a patch kit coming in. So we'll get that done. We've got New Year's. And then if I recall correctly, we've got Argyle Day. National Argyle Day. And then the next is Rubber Ducky Day. And then I believe it's Polka Dot Day. And then I believe it's National Backwards Day we're going to be celebrating. And then the next week is Wear Something Red Day. And then I think the next week is going to be the precursor to Valentine's. So it'll be like Cupid Day or something like that. And I'm close. I'm dangerously close now to actually lapping myself to where I was doing stuff every week. I was trying to remember exactly when that kicked in. And it was sometime in March or April. I think I know for sure that by the time I made it to Memorial Day that I was going every week. So I'm getting close. We may swap out some of those holidays and do something a little bit different, but you know, it's coming along and it's been a fun adventure, and I've got lots of costumes I can pull from now, and so all of that is good. The writing is good. I kicked back in and started writing again on Sunday. I am now on the second sprint for book 14. Each book is written in a pair of writing sprints that are each 2 months long. In each writing sprint, I'm trying to do 10,000 words a week. And so if you do the math on that, average of 4 weeks per month, that brings the books in somewhere around 160,000 words. The target is actually 150,000 words, but they typically come in around 160,000 words, if not longer, when I can't find a stopping place. So I am on that second writing sprint now. I actually had a little fewer weeks when I'm in this particular time frame, because when I start the second book of the year, I typically start around October 1st and then wrap it up on November 15th to have time to get the first book of the year into production so that I can have a week off at Christmas. And so what that means is I usually have about 7 weeks on that first writing sprint as opposed to 8. But I am picking up a week here. So, you know, I'll have 9 weeks, I think, for a writing sprint. And then that happens through January and February, and then in March I start beta preparation, and hopefully the beta copies of book 14 go out to the beta readers around April 1st. And then I start book 15, and book 15 is important, as I've mentioned before, because once I get book 15 roughed in and somewhat done, I am in the single digits of books left to do. That will drop me down to 9 books to go, since there's 24 books in this series, and that just seems incredible. And then, once I get book 15 done, we do book 16, which is the end of the second set of 8. So, of course, it's got to have a big revelation, which it will. So, yeah, things are puttering along with the writing. And if I had more time to write, I could have a lot of fun with book 14. I mean, there's been some boilerplate stuff we've just needed to get taken care of. And, you know, there's 2 ancillary storylines in the first part of book 14 that are really there to just keep driving the story forward while we've got to get through the boilerplate stuff. But then the second half of book 14... Man, it could be so fun if I had time to really wrap it out and work on it. But I'm gonna give it the old college try, and it'll be fine. We'll get some good stuff in there. It's just, it won't be the same thing as if I was taking like 2 years to work on the second half of book 14, because I just don't have that type of time. Anyways, so all of that is good. All is well. Costumes are good. Family is good. Life is good. I was reflecting on this year as I was driving into town to swing by church and help with the video and go over and pick up my mother-in-law's car and drive it a little bit. And I was just reflecting. I was reflecting on God's goodness this year, and how enjoyable this year has been for me, and the jokes, you know, that I have shared with God this year. It's really just been good. Such a privilege to know Him. Goodness. So, anyways, I have been watching on YouTube some interesting things about people rehearsing their near-death experiences and people talking about the things that they learned while they've had their near-death experiences. And all of that is just very interesting to me. It always has been. And in watching those, I was just contrasted again with the difference. The difference. With those types of outlooks, with people who have had a near-death experience and they've gone somewhere, we'll call it heaven, and they've met people and they've felt those experiences are more real than ever they've ever experienced here. And they've come back with messages like there is nothing to fear. And that you are loved more than you can possibly imagine. There was one neuroscientist who I believe also said that the third thing he had learned, besides there is nothing to fear and you are loved more than you can possibly imagine, was you can never do anything wrong. And you can never do anything wrong. And I will tell you honestly, using my definitions of those words, that's a little harder for me. But I do recognize that God in Christ Jesus reconciled the world to himself. And that there is a space in those verses where Paul talks about the message of reconciliation in 2 Corinthians 5:19. There is a space in there where the statement, you can never do anything wrong, rings true. But when you hear those types of proclamations from people, how that it was a place of love and a place of radiance and there was no fear and just it was a wonderful, wonderful place that they experienced after they died. When you hear that, and then you compare it and contrast it against what some are trying to say is the true meaning of life, and some are trying to say should be the activities that we are engaged in. Boy. There's such a difference between those two. And I came across a story this week that I was just saddened by it. Because it falls still within this vein of the effects that this woke culture is having on people who are embracing it. We talked last week about how that it is the exact opposite of what is helpful for people. Cognitive behavioral therapy is helpful for people. And yet, wokeism is the exact opposite of that, and it seeks to cause people to overgeneralize, and it seeks to get people to engage in binary thinking and to catastrophize and to problematize. And there was a sad story this week that was published, in the New York Times. And I did read the article. When I went back to it, it was behind a paywall. And, you know, I'm not going to subscribe or open up an account with the New York Times. That's not going to happen. But if I recall the tone of the article correctly, that the article really was presenting what had occurred not in a balanced way, but that almost as if this is what needed to happen. Because the name of the article was something like a racial slur, something, and a reckoning or something, you know, that, and if you just read the title of the article, you'd think, oh, wow, you know, so somebody used a racial slur and then they were held account for it. And then you'd start digging into the article and you find out, and I will do my best to get the facts right on this. It is dark in the car, so I can't see my notes. So there's a high school. There's a young cheerleader. I've heard, read some reports that she was 14, some reports that she was 15. This isn't noted in the article, but she is supposedly quoting the lyrics of a song. She sends this 3-second clip of her using the N-word. Some have said she was just quoting the lyrics of a song. The New York Times article did say that the use of the N-word was something that was common at this particular high school. So she sends out this tweet, it's 3 seconds long. One of her classmates sees it, a person of color. He is offended, which, you know, that's understandable. Given our culture, given our set, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he downloads it to his phone. Okay. Reading the title of the article, you would think that, oh, then what happened is that this got out, it went viral. And, you know, then there was a reckoning that this young lady had to account for. But that is what happened. There was 3 years before that happened. 3 years. I'm getting my mail. One moment. So this young man, this is my replacement that I needed because I punched a hole. And I am going to patch, but I got a replacement because it was only a little over $12. And I thought, why not? So what happened here was that there was no backlash immediately for this young lady. Everybody went on their merry way, except this one young man. This one young man saved it to his phone. And then he waited. And he waited. And he waited. And he waited until this young lady applied to a college, got accepted onto the cheer team for that college, and then he posted this video. And of course, it went viral. And of course, the mob descended. And the college withdrew their invitation to her. She got kicked off the cheer team, et cetera, because there were just so many people that were just so aghast that a 14-year-old girl, 15-year-old girl, might get swept up in the terminology that was being bandied about at her high school, that a 14 or 15-year-old girl, you know, might do something silly, and because of that, should be banished from the college she was accepted to and kicked off the cheer team because, of course, there's no redemption anymore. And we're going to hold young teenagers accountable for every action that they do. But that, for me, was not the saddest part of the story. It really wasn't the saddest part of the story. The saddest part of the story was the young man. Because his actions were premeditated and they were vindictive and they were filled with condemnation. And the saddest part of the story is that he was given affirmation for behaving in that way. My true hope is that a few years down the road, he will look back on this and decide this wasn't the best course for his life. Because if he does that and he recognizes that he made a bad turn there, I would hope that there would be people around him that would encourage him to seek forgiveness, and that he would be restored to a relationship with this young cheerleader. Because his actions were very much driven by flesh. Very much controlled by flesh. And those actions demonstrated that the flesh had a significant amount of control over his life. He didn't do it as a 14 or 15-year-old. He mulled on it and stewed on it and waited for years to whatever age he was at the time when he did. I don't even know how old he is, but we're assuming they're in somewhere in the same time range. So now you have a young man who's waiting for 3 years to carry this out. And now he's in his 17s, 18s. A lot of his personality is set. A lot of it's formed up. And he considers himself righteous for having wrought judgment on someone else. The problem here is that vindictiveness and that condemnation will not stay contained to how he feels about people who use the N-word. That vindictiveness and condemnation will spill over into every other area of his life. And the flesh will eat him up. And he has wrought on himself such destruction by taking this course. There's always a way back from that kind of destruction. There always is. No matter where you are in life, you can always push yourself more towards life as opposed to destruction simply by starting to make better decisions. You always have that capability. That's the glorious thing about life. But if he has no one around him that can point to stuff and say, yeah, that was a bad idea. You know, you should probably... If he has no one around him to help him with that, I just feel so bad because he has been validated by a national media telling him that this was a good idea. And it's just the flesh in the national media that is telling him that it's a good idea, because that flesh knows it's a horrible idea for this young man. I mean, I have no reason to attempt to follow this young man's development. But if he stays on this course, I can guarantee you his life will be miserable, because there will always be someone else to condemn and vilify. And that will put him in a position of terrible isolation and potentially terrible fear that he's going to do something wrong and someone else will vilify him. It's just, you know, I heard Oprah say one time, someone had told her, and it's still true today, that unforgiveness is like eating rat poison and then sitting down to watch the rat and wait for it to die. Which, of course, it won't. All that will happen is you'll just destroy yourself. So that was a sad story. You know, I read quite a few tweets about people, you know, going after the New York Times for this, but I don't know that that's necessarily going to make any difference. You know, there are narratives that have formed up in our country now. And these narratives, a lot of them are very, very destructive. So it behooves us to examine our own hearts and see what our motivations are. It behooves us to pay attention to why we are doing things. And in this next year, I believe that the absolute best situation, best strategy you can take in every situation, the absolute best strategy is love your neighbor. And if you can't do that, at least try to be more like Mr. Rogers and be kind. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. Happy New Year.